From the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain Daily. I'm Tori Maguire and it is Friday, July 3. Australia has joined the United Kingdom in offering Hong Kong residents refuge after the territory was engulfed by yet another wave of protests and arrests over China's new security laws. The move came after British Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced he would open the country's borders to more than 3 million Hong Kongers if they wanted to leave the former British colony. I'm joined now by our China correspondent in Canberra, Eric Bagshaw. Welcome back to Please Explain Daily, Eric.
Good to be with you, Tori.
There is a lot of news in your patch this week. Can you please start by explaining to us what China's new security laws involve?
Well, these are extraordinary new powers. They give the Chinese government basically the ability to clamp down on any activities that could be deemed as secession, subversion, undermining the Chinese state. The goal of them is, you know, ostensibly, the Chinese government would argue, to bring an end to about 15 months of protest in Hong Kong. But they really do much more than that. They go as far as appointing a new intelligence agency and putting it on in Hong Kong, which has never before existed, appointing special judges to hear national security cases, and even things like asking media organizations to delete information that the government might consider compromising national security. Now, in an Australian context, something like national security is, you know, generally deemed to be things like secrets of the state, relations between countries, highly classified information. But of course, in China, national security really can take a whole manner of things and a variety of accusations. To give you an example, this week, people were arrested for putting up flags which had British and American flags on them, as well as pro-independence slogans. And they were deemed potentially in breach of national security. So it's a far, far broader ranging set of legislation than anything we could possibly consider in Australia or really anywhere else in the Western world. And it obviously has very significant implications, basically for things like freedom of association, freedom of speech, and the right potentially to a fair trial.
So, Eric, life for Hong Kongers is changed irreparably by this.
Absolutely. I think we can probably mark this as a really significant turning point, if not the most significant turning point, since the handover of Hong Kong from Britain in 1997. You've got to remember that up until this point, we've really had years of protest, which started in 2014 under the umbrella movement and then went all the way up until last year, where we had really huge protests, hundreds of thousands of people over an extradition bill with China, which would have seen Hong Kongers potentially tried in the mainland. And now this year, with this new legislation imposed by Beijing, really what they've done is brought that legislation to Hong Kong and essentially imposed some of China's mainland laws on the semi-autonomous territory. I think it's sort of a sign of how significant it is that within hours of this legislation being passed, Joshua Wong, who led the pro-democracy movement Demosisto, along with his three co-founders, all resigned and the party was disbanded. That was the most significant pro-democracy party in Hong Kong. Many people feel as though they can no longer safely continue their advocacy for pro-democracy movements in Hong Kong as long as these laws are in place, and really are now going to ground up. You know, posters were being torn down around the city. People were really resigning en masse from a lot of these political movements. So it is striking what has happened and happened very, very swiftly.
So just to be clear, they were doing that for their own safety.
That's right. Exactly. They felt as though the risk of being tried and potentially sentenced to life in prison for advocating for Hong Kong independence, for democratic movements within Hong Kong was simply too great for them to continue with their activities. They basically said they'll continue to advocate in a private capacity, but really we haven't seen any of the, apart from, you know, sporadic, the occasional protester holding up flags, you know, sort of proclaiming pro-independence slogans and then swiftly being arrested for it. We haven't seen the scale of protest in response to these laws now that they have been imposed that we saw last year, I think because fundamentally people are scared.
Eric, there's more than 100,000 Australian citizens living in Hong Kong. What's the advice to them from the Australian government?
Well, it's actually just updated overnight. The Department of Foreign Affairs basically changed its travel advice, warning that the new laws are so broad that you may be breaching national security without even being aware of it. They've said that, basically Australians should take extra care, should be very, very mindful of any kind of political action, certainly. But that really, there is a risk that you could be potentially come up on charges in Hong Kong for endangering national security and really not even being aware of what you're doing. The laws are so broad. And extraordinarily, the laws are, again, drafted in such a way that people in Australia may be in breach of the laws before travelling to Hong Kong for expressing sentiment that might be seen as undermining the Chinese state, which means that if someone was to travel from Australia, land in Hong Kong, and potentially even just transit through, they may be liable for arrest for undermining the Chinese state.
It's staggering, isn't it? Governments around the world, including ours, are considering offering asylum to Hong Kongers, aren't they?
They are. Yeah, the Prime Minister was surprisingly strong yesterday, actually. I think it's fair from conversations that I've had here in Canberra that the sort of emotion and the escalation of the situation in Hong Kong, influenced the Prime Minister's decision yesterday to say that the Australian government was very actively considering safe haven visas for Hong Kongers who wanted to leave the territory. It followed a move from the UK earlier on Wednesday to offer former British passport holders and people who are eligible for British citizenship in a way through Hong Kong's post-colonial charter to offer up to 3 million of them refuge in the UK. It's not expected that anywhere near that number would take that offer up, but nonetheless, there is a significant amount of people who are clearly exploring their options to leave the former British colony. And Australia was keen to get some cover diplomatically before it also offered its own pathways.
I was going to say, it's quite a provocative thing to offer given the tensions with China at the moment.
It is. And there was really no way that the Australian government was going to take the lead on offering safe haven visas. But now that Britain has moved and offered it in such an emphatic way, it's seen as a less risky proposition. We've obviously had, frankly, months of historically high tensions with Beijing. They are still our largest trading partner. And of course, the idea of offering refuge to people who live within that country is undoubtedly potentially very inflammatory. So the government's really got to balance that. But also the government is conscious that, Hong Kongers are extremely valuable migrants. They have high STEM literacy, which Australia's got a massive skill shortage of. And as you'll see in a story I'm writing tomorrow, they're also, extremely well-versed in things like venture capital, investment. This is a global financial hub. And Australia at the moment has very, very little venture capital or investment flows throwing through the economy. And Hong Kongers, as it happens, that is their business. They like investing in new businesses. And so the government is really actively involved or is looking at how it can harness some of those abilities and basically bring them over to Australia to try and boost Australia's own post-coronavirus economy.
Just a logistical question, Eric. Under the pandemic, are there even flights from Hong Kong to Australia available?
There are still flights from Hong Kong to Australia available. There are still commercial flights. There's obviously far fewer than there once was, but you still can get here. Now, of course, the question is, and this is very much still being worked out in the detail, is whether you need to, waive restrictions at the moment on all Australian non-residents from being able to enter the country, which is still in place. You still have to be an Australian resident to be able to get into the country. You'd assume perhaps that if Hong Kongers were to apply for visas, then that would be considered a form of residency and they might be allowed in under those circumstances. But again, I think certainly parts of the government here and the bureaucracy, the Department of Foreign Affairs, were surprised at how strong the Prime Minister's comments were yesterday. So there's still a lot of work in the background to be done on the mechanics of this, despite the very clear intention to proceed in some way on the safe haven option.
It's certainly a very stark indicator of Beijing's intentions, really, in how it's going to conduct itself going forward.
It is. I think there's sort of a couple of things at play here. One, Beijing realised that the coronavirus was perhaps a strategic opportunity to impose something like this, given the restrictions on people being able to assemble on mass scale protests due to the coronavirus. There is obviously still large unrest in Hong Kong. We saw 300 arrests just the other day, but the coronavirus no doubt undermines some of that ability for people to assemble in a large scale. And secondly, there is a US election coming up. Now, if as far as China is concerned, if it's Biden in the White House, I think there is a far greater risk of US intervention potentially in Hong Kong than under someone like Donald Trump. And it's basically looking to push through these laws to establish its own markers around that territory, potentially before that US election, and really saw now is the time to do it. And you can see the speed at which they moved. These laws, the largest changes to national security in Hong Kong in its history, were pushed through with no public consultation. We didn't see the legislation until after it was passed, and it was all floated and signed off on within a month. So they wanted to get this thing done quick, and they did.
Well, it's hard to watch because Hong Kong has a special place in many Australian hearts. Eric, thanks for talking us through it all.
Great to chat, Tori.
Today's episode of Please Explain Daily was produced by Taylor Denny and Amelia Maguire. The journalists, editors, photographers, producers and tech team at The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald work tirelessly to cover the news that matters. For coverage you can trust, visit our websites or buy our papers. To support our journalism, you can subscribe via our homepages or just search Subscribe, The Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.